It's the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. You're listening to the Ideas Network. President Donald Trump defends his son over his meeting with a Russian lawyer, while others insist this is evidence of collusion. Our guests will discuss this story and other top issues in the news this week, including the U.S. Senate's new health care bill, the impasse over state transportation funding, a new Democratic challenger to Governor Scott Walker, and more. Plus, if you have a news story that you want to put on the table, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me welcome our guests. We are happy to have with us Penny Bernard Schaber, a former Democratic state representative from Appleton. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you for being with us. And also with us is Keene Winters, small business owner from Schofield, the coordinator of the Center-Right Coalition of WASA. Good morning, Keene.
Good morning, Joy.
Well,
happy Friday.
Yeah, happy Friday. Donald Trump Jr. insists he did nothing wrong when he met with a Russian lawyer after his father secured the Republican nomination for president. According to emails that he released this week, the attorney was described to Trump Jr. as a Russian government lawyer who had dirt on Hillary Clinton. According to Trump Jr., the lawyer, who has since said she works for herself, not the Kremlin, had no information on Hillary Clinton and eventually changed the subject to Russian adoptions in the wake of U.S. sanctions. The meeting ended a short time later. Here's what Donald Trump Jr. had to say about it during an interview with Sean Hannity on Fox News.
In retrospect, I probably would have done things a little differently. Again, this is before the Russia mania. This is before they were building it up in the press. For me, this was opposition research. They had something, you know, maybe concrete evidence to all the stories I'd been hearing about, but they were probably underreported for, you know, years, not just during the campaign. So I think I wanted to hear it out. But really, it went nowhere, and it was apparent that that wasn't what the meeting was actually about.
So, Penny, starting with you, he just wanted to hear some opposition research. It's what, you know, what you do during campaigns. What do you think?
Well, you know, that kind of points out something that's wrong with our campaign system, is if we win by looking for dirt on our opponents, it means that we're not really running a strong, solid race, talking about what we want to do to change our country. And so that's one issue. But the other issue is that Donald Trump Jr. told people he did not meet with anybody from Russia. And then he has emails that show he actually went to Russia. So I'm not quite sure what he meant by when he said he didn't meet with anybody, but then he went to Russia and met with people. So that tells me that he lied, for one thing. And then when he went there looking for dirt, that means he's looking for stuff in a campaign, which is illegal to work with foreign affairs in foreign countries in your campaigns. So I think it does meet the definition of collusion.
Well, what do you say, Keene?
Well, I am always reminded of that famous scene in Casablanca where Claude Rains tells Humphrey Bogart, "I'm shocked to find gambling going on at Rick's Cafe." Opposition research happens. It is part of campaigns. You know, and I agree with Penny. I certainly would like to keep things focused on the issues. I don't think there's any indication that Donald Trump went to Russia. Again, opposition research, if someone comes and says they have dirt on your opponent, I think most people would hear him out.
Yeah. Let me ask you, Keene, though, if there's some reporter or, you know, campaign consultant or someone, you know, some group that's looked into a campaign, that's one thing. But is the Russian government an adversarial government another?
Well, you know, I've pondered that issue. And, you know, I think in this country what we really value most is transparency. And the question is whether the information is true or not. You know, so if you have Daniel Ellsberg abscond with the Pentagon Papers, the fact that the public's right to know really trumps sort of what is the illegal act of stealing the papers. And so the question is, it becomes whether there is true information there, and so it's a little bit of a gray area to me.
Yeah. What do you say, Penny?
Well, you know, when somebody goes and talks to a foreign country that is adversarial to our interests, I think that is a problem, and that we should not just brush this off and say that, oh, it's really not a big deal, because it is a big deal, and we should treat it as such.
President Trump defended his son's actions yesterday during a visit to Paris. Here's what President Trump had to say.
I do think this. I think from a practical standpoint, most people would have taken that meeting. It's called opposition research or even research into your opponent. I've had many people, I have only been in politics for 2 years, but I've had many people call up, oh, gee, we have information on this factor or this person or, frankly, Hillary. That's very standard in politics. Politics is not the nicest business in the world, but it's very standard where they have information and you take the information.
Penny, so it's very standard?
Well, unfortunately, finding dirt on people in campaigns has become very standard. And again, I say that we should be looking at what are the issues in campaigns, what are people's plans for what they want to do when they get into office, rather than trashing their opponent and telling lies about people, which is what happens very often in our campaigns these days.
Mm-hmm. Let me, before
and I would add to that, you know, it is unfortunate, but let's say dirt on your opponent can be a legitimate campaign issue if it's true information. The public has a right to know that information, even if it's essentially damning or not. And so that's really where I draw the line. And I think I agree with Penny that lying and misleading is certainly not good. But finding out facts that may be not flattering, that's certainly fair game.
Senator Chuck Grassley, the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Republican Iowa, is going to be asking Donald Trump Jr. to testify pretty soon, perhaps as early as next week, over this matter. Meanwhile, President Trump continues to call this ongoing Russian collusion story a witch hunt. Is it warranted or is it a witch hunt, Keene?
Well, it depends on what you mean by witch hunt. If your notion of a witch hunt is something like Arthur Miller's Crucible, and you think of sort of the rhetorical traps that are set for people in that play, yeah, it feels a little bit like that. But I do think we have a legitimate investigation going on. We should be concerned about Russians and Chinese. I mean, the Chinese really stole a huge portion of the federal personnel database. We should be concerned about hacking and cybersecurity and disinformation and those types of issues on a broader scale. And we have an investigation, but we also have to respect that there is an investigation. People deserve due process. We should follow due process and not try and spin this so much. Otherwise, we'll probably have to go to Switzerland or something to impound a neutral jury.
Is it warranted to call Donald Trump Jr. before the investigative committee, Penny?
Oh,
absolutely. Yeah. Oh, I'm sorry. Absolutely it is, because if he's been involved in talking to people in Russia or other countries about what's going to happen in our country, that should be investigated. And it should be, as Keene said, a public right to know, with a legitimate investigation that follows the facts and tries to put forward facts that we find.
Yeah, the Russians actually reached out and tried to influence him. So I think we want to learn how they did. I mean, obviously the meeting ended in an abrupt termination of their conversation. But it was certainly part of a Russian, it seems like it was part of a, I should say it seems, because we don't know for sure, but it's certainly a good idea to get to the bottom of it.
Yeah. And in general, Penny, I also asked Keene about President Trump tweeting this week again that this Russian collusion story is a witch hunt. Do you view it as a witch hunt?
No, it's looking for facts. And we've done this for a lot of different people in office where you try to find the facts, and the only way to do that is to investigate their actions and investigate what they've said and done. So it's looking for facts. It is not a witch hunt.
We have lots of callers, so let's get a few comments from our listeners. Cole in Madison is with us. Hi, Cole.
Hi. So I just wanted to comment about Keene's remark that it's normal to gather information about your opposition. And it's really frustrating to hear that as the excuse for this, because there's nothing normal about what he did. This isn't normal opposition research. Nobody has ever said that, yeah, I'll go to a hostile foreign government that says they have information, accepts that meeting. If North Korea said they had information, you wouldn't say, okay, cool, let's go get that information. No, because you don't know where that information came from. You don't know what their intentions are behind it. The only thing normal about gathering opposition information is, as you've already stated, through some kind of third party here in America that sets that information and gets it all. It is so beyond okay to be calling this a normal and acceptable thing, because you see that with the Trump campaign and his cabinet all the time trying to normalize these behaviors, and that's really dangerous. And I'm just, it's frustrating to hear that continue to be an excuse when it's absolutely not an excuse.
Yeah, it's not normal. And let me go one step further with that train of thought, Keene. Should Donald Trump Jr. have contacted the FBI immediately that he was, the Russian government, or someone who was saying they were an attorney with the Russian government, had information on Hillary Clinton and wanted to get involved in the election?
Well, he has to know a lot about it first. I mean, is there information? And apparently there wasn't. Is this person really connected to the Russian government? I mean, I think you take the meeting first, and if there's something there that's important, then you refer it on. But I think I'm right back in Rick's Cafe. I think we thinking that these things go on. You have to consider the source, whether it's a disgruntled person leaking to the newspaper or a foreign adversary. You have to consider the source. But if the information is, consider the information. If it can be verified as true, then it's fair game, and the public has a right to know.
Penny, do you think that that email should have gone straight to the FBI?
Well, I do, because of the fact that Russia is a foreign adversary, and Russia has in the past, done things in our country, and we have done things in their country which are not right. But we need to look at where this information was coming from, and the fact that they contacted somebody in the Trump campaign directly, means that this country was trying to influence things, and we should consider that a foreign country should not have major influence in our elections.
Steve in Boulder Junction is with us. Hi, Steve.
Hi. The government of Ukraine has apologized for contributing to research on behalf of the Democrats and the DNC against Trump, and that's basically an admitted fact by the way that the Ukrainian government has behaved in their apology to the current administration. So I just don't understand why the investigation and the news media doesn't cover that aspect, and there aren't calls for an investigation about the facts about how Ukraine worked with the Democrats to try to torpedo Trump.
Yeah, there was a story in Politico about that, and this has come up from the Republicans saying Hillary Clinton was in cahoots with Ukraine. Penny, what about that?
Well, again, I think we should investigate that. If Ukraine, another foreign country, is involved in our campaigns and our election process here in the United States, we should investigate that. I don't think it matters whether it's Democrat or Republican or independent or anybody. If a foreign country gets involved, we should be looking into the details and facts of what they did.
Keene?
Well, I think in a broader sense, the two key issues are hacking by foreign governments and disinformation by foreign governments, both with designs on influencing our elections. And we really ought to not only investigate, but come up with some solutions to harden harden our security against those things.
We are going to take a short pause, and then we'll continue talking some about this latest development in the Russia election connection. And we'll talk about other top stories in the news as well during this edition of The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Keen Winters, a small business owner from Schofield, the coordinator of the Center-Right Coalition of Wausau, and Penny Bernard-Shaber, a former Democratic state representative from Appleton. If you'd like to join us, 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. This is The Week in Review on the Ideas Network. This is The Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine. We are talking with two guests from different perspectives about the top stories in politics. This week, we are talking right now about President Trump defending his son over his meeting last summer with a Russian lawyer. Was that evidence of collusion? Is this much to do about nothing? What do you think? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Let me take another call. Ned in Lake Dubay is with us. Hi, Ned.
Hi. This is more than just getting opposition research. This is a case of violating the law because what happened was they conspired with a foreign national about the U.S. election. And so a law was broken. And the second issue is Jared Kushner was in the meeting, and Jared Kushner has highest level clearance to be a top level advisor to the president. On his form that he filled out to become to get clearance through the FBI, he lied. And he lied that he had never had any contact with foreign nationals. And he also said he had to go back and revise it three times. I don't even know why it's allowed that someone is allowed to go back and change their form more than once. It seems like this is an obvious breaking of the law.
Yeah. Well, the whole story came out in part because of the amending of that form and reporters looking into why that form was amended too. So, well, Keen, I guess first, this is Jared Kushner lied on his security form, and he was at that meeting. What do you say about that?
Well, I say it's probably an oversight. You meet with a lot of people. Again, whether she is, the lawyer contends she's independent, not a government official. Those things are murky with Russia. But again, we have to be careful when we use loaded terms like they had a meeting. We're going to have a judicial process and an investigation to determine the nature of those meetings and whether it was a conspiracy or not. I think that's jumping to conclusions.
Any comment, Penny?
Well, again, I agree with Ned that this was breaking the law, that working with a foreign country is against our current laws for campaigns. And so we should look at that very carefully.
Well, we have lots to talk about, and we will get to it soon. But let me talk about how this is affecting the agenda in the Trump administration overall. President Trump is saying that the media is making a big deal out of this, calling it all fake news, and saying it's a witch hunt. We talked with Republican Congressman Glenn Grothman from Wisconsin's 6th Congressional District yesterday, who said this was not affecting the agenda in Washington. He says the only place that he's hearing any talk about this story is on the media or on TV. Let's take a listen.
In all the meetings I've been at this week, be it with the Education Committee, be it with the Budget Committee, with the Republicans collectively, I cannot remember one person talking about this story. Including socially at night, went out to dinner last night with, or saw about 5 Republicans for dinner last night. hasn't come up yet.
We also talked with Democratic Congressman Ron Kind from Wisconsin's 3rd Congressional District, who had a very different perspective.
Everyone's talking about it. I don't know what world Glenn is living in, but you can't help it. I mean, it's just so amazing. I mean, the drip, drip, drip. And this administration cannot function well for the American people with a death by a thousand cuts. And that is what's happening right now.
So, Keene, do you think that this administration is dealing with a death by a thousand cuts with the
I think there's no question that it's on people's minds. It consumes resources. It consumes thinking time and responding to these things. But these are tough issues. I mean, we spent a good portion of this call sort of saying, you know, we just shouldn't deal with adversaries for bad people, but you know, we have freedom of speech in this country, and everybody gets right to be heard regardless of their background, and we have to weigh the information that's provided accordingly, verify the information that's provided accordingly. But you know, this whole notion you can't talk to people or people can't say things, that's very problematic if you want to have a country with free speech.
Penny?
Well, I think that the Republicans don't necessarily want to talk about it because it's embarrassing to them. And so, of course, if something's embarrassing to you, you won't talk about it. Whereas the Democrats think it's an important issue that we should look into and we should find out what the facts are. But it is important for us to remember that we have a separation of powers and that Congress should continue to do its job, even though the administration is in disarray, because there are some very important things that need to continue to be taken care of. And if we're all focused on the administration and take our eye off the ball, I'm concerned that Republicans will be passing things in Congress that will be harmful to our country in the long run.
We're going to talk about some of the issues before Congress and move from the Russia story for now, maybe more next week when there's more developments. So let's talk about repealing and replacing Obamacare. And let's see if listeners have anything to say about the newest U.S. Senate version of a plan to do that. 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. All right, Senate Republicans yesterday unveiled their newest plan to repeal and replace the Affordable Care Act. The proposal cuts Medicaid. It retains taxes on the wealthy. It adds money for states to lower premiums for high-cost enrollees. One of the most significant changes is that it would allow insurers to sell low-premium policies with minimal or skimpy coverage. That's a move to get conservatives on board. What do you think, Keene, of this new U.S. Senate plan?
Well, I think it's a step in the right direction. I mean, I really do wish we could go back to an era before Obamacare. Wisconsin really was doing things right. We have the HRSA program, the high-risk insurance pool. 95% of Wisconsinites were insured, and that was a good way to deal with pre-existing conditions that didn't, break the bank, and also create perverse incentives for people not to get health insurance. So I thought we had a pretty good system. It's been upended. I like the notion that more resources are coming back to the states and that we could restore the status quo ante here in Wisconsin.
And Penny, what do you think of what we know so far about the U.S. Senate bill?
Well, I don't think that healthcare being affordable and accessible should be a political football. I think we should have a plan that allows people to afford their healthcare, and everyone should be able to access that healthcare then and use it to help protect their health. I think we should use our proper channels in the legislative process with public hearings and not be ramming things through that have been changed and manipulated to make certain people happy. It's this is not a political football. This is people's lives, and we should take this very seriously. Now, to Keene's point about Wisconsin previously having good coverage, the Hearst coverage in our state, the high-risk pool, was very, very expensive. And when I was in office, I had people calling my office asking, how can I get these premiums down so I can afford this coverage? So going back to what we had here in Wisconsin is better than what we're looking at from the federal point of view, but it's not the right move for all of us.
Let's go to a caller on this, Nancy in Cross Plains. Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
Yes, go ahead.
Just cannot see them getting anything under control with the health insurance until we get the pricing of the medical procedures, hospital costs, doctor's costs under control.
Yeah, so...
And the two are connected, so how are you going to get insurance that is reasonably priced if you can't get the cost down? And I don't know how to do it all. I just think that that should be something that somebody should look at to try and get that under control.
Keene?
Well, I think she identifies one of the key issues here is in Obamacare, for all that it tried to do. I mean, you wrapped a large package of standard benefits into insurance, which made the insurance very, very costly. So you're going to have to, some things that worked really nicely, and Penny will probably have a field day with this, but as a financial advisor, when Medicare Part D was issued, there was a thing called the donut hole, which was really an embedded deductible that worked very, very well at giving people one first dollar coverage, so everybody wanted to buy it, but then also having those people think about getting on generics in lowering the cost of their medicine. But, of course, everybody hated the donut hole because it was something they all worried about. But it was a simple deductible, but instead of having it up front, it was in the middle, and it really did work. I mean, it was really dramatic in, one, getting everybody to take the insurance, which you got to do to make the insurance good, and two, getting everybody to shop around for their insurance to keep costs lower. So I think there are mechanisms out there that can be used. Unfortunately, it's probably hard to find any that would be popular.
Penny, you can react to that, but also, is there some things that you think that could be done aside from repealing and replacing the Affordable Care Act that could fix or fine-tune the Affordable Care Act to make it more affordable?
Well, I think Nancy has a point in saying that, price controls and cost controls in medical procedures is very important. I'm a physical therapist. I've been a physical therapist for a long time. And when I first got into the healthcare profession, there used to be things called a utilization review board, and there was price reviews that were done. And over the years, they've deregulated hospitals, allowing them to charge whatever it is they can charge because they can just charge whatever amount they want for things. And that's why we have such expensive health care right now. And people can't afford it any longer. And the donut hole forced people to choose worse coverage than what they could have gotten if we had been able to negotiate for prescription drug prices. Now, not allowing Medicare to negotiate for prescription drug prices has made the cost of prescription drugs go way up. So, the donut hole wasn't a perfect fix for anything. And if Keene thinks it was, well, I'd say wait till you get older, Keene, and need a lot of medicine, and it won't work for you.
Well, and I didn't know you were a physical therapist, Penny. I'll have to talk to you about my ankle one of these days. No, I'm just kidding.
Right.
Going to the politics of the repeal and replace effort and this new Senate bill, Keene, I understand that this move to get conservatives on board, that would allow the low premium policies that don't have, all the coverage, maybe all that essential coverage that was in the Affordable Care Act, a part of this, that might get conservatives on board, but that's going to alienate some of the moderates.
Some of the moderates. at the Ted
even
Cruz
worse,
compromise.
Even worse, it makes it so people pay for nothing. People will be paying premiums for a low-cost insurance policy that will not take care of them when they get sick.
Yeah, and so, Keen, the moderates aren't going to like that, or maybe some other stuff here.
Well, that's right. And nobody, there are people who see this from different angles. There are some co-op programs that are out there now where people are joining co-ops for their routine care, and then they layer on top of that a catastrophic policy. So there are certainly having those options out there to try and create other mechanisms for doing that, and I think Penny would take us in the wrong direction, which is trying to regulate the cost. It's really the Medicare cost report that that hospitals had to fill out for years and years that has started the cost shifting that makes costs so inscrutable in healthcare in the first place. So I don't think that you're going to regulate and price control your way out of this. You're going to have some experimentation, some by the states and some by insurance companies, to lower the cost. And so we've got to give a little more freedom out there for people to have choices.
Yeah.
Well, you know, when I have asked people from the hospital association or doctors or other legislators, you know, what is driving up the cost of health care, and people say, well, we should just have a free market in health care. Well, you can have a free market when you buy a car or you buy a ladder at Home Depot. But when you break your hip and you have to go to the hospital, it's not a free market. You don't have a choice. You need to get the health care at that point. If you have a heart attack, it's not a free market. You have to have health care. So trying to apply free market principles to this very complex system really has not worked, and it has not brought the prices down in our health care. So, yes, we should have some experimentation, but we should do that in an open, transparent fashion that is not a partisan or polarizing issue. It should be an issue of taking care of the health care of Americans so that we have a healthy workforce and a healthy country.
Let me.
Shifting more of the control and design of those programs back to the states from the federal government?
Ricardo from Racine in, because we're coming close to break and a couple of callers that I need to get in. Ricardo, go ahead.
Hi. I just had a quick comment about Paul Ryan, who has recently said, I'm not going to have any town hall meetings, and because of people being bussed in, security, and this has never happened. And I think because of what he's not doing, a young man has stepped forth, Randy Bryce, who is an iron worker and who has raised like $1 million in a couple weeks and has 2 million hits on his computer thing. And I think we're going to have a race here. People have said Paul Ryan is not doing much. He's not representing us. And this Randy Bryce is an iron worker. He's got his mom who's had health problems. And I think we've got a credible candidate here. We're going to have a surprise.
Thank you, Ricardo. There is a Democratic challenger to Congressman Paul Ryan has announced. It was a couple of weeks ago there. But Paul Ryan was in the news this week saying why he's not holding town halls, because he doesn't want protesters disrupting town halls. And most of those protesters are over the efforts to repeal and replace Obamacare. Any quick comment, Penny, on Ricardo's observations?
Well, have people forgotten when the Affordable Care Act was being put together and when they did have public hearings, and the fact that there was a lot of dissension at that time too? People were very vocal and verbal. I remember going to a town hall meeting for Congressman Kagan where people were really nasty. And, you know, it's our job as representatives, or if congressional or legislative at the state level, to listen to people and to give them an opportunity to tell us what they think. So I think town hall meetings are very, very important and should be had by all of our representatives.
Keen?
I think town hall meetings are important. I think we need a restoration of decorum, and I'm sure Penny would agree. You know, we don't need chanting. We don't need shouting people down. We should have those kind of dialogues. But I wish we could have some ground rules for those kinds of meetings that people would agree on if they want to attend. in terms of behavior, and I think that might bring the town hall meetings back, because I think from both sides they've really gotten abusive and out of hand, and we don't. That's not good politics.
Right. People should be civil with each other and should be willing to listen, and we should actually have civil discourse where you can listen to opposing points of view and learn something from them and then work together to solve a problem.
Let's go to Tom in Burlington next. Hi, Tom.
I woke up the other day with Robin Voss's father was outside my door, and someone's pumping water out next door, and I thought, oh, the flood is here now. He had to go back to the popcorn factory. They had to close it because there's no electricity there, and he was going to stay there all day because there were a couple of trucks coming in, and they couldn't use their cell phones to even call the companies and let them know that the plant was closed down.
Wait a minute, Tom. I know I'm really glad you called, because we wanted to talk about the flooding in Burlington.
Right.
But Robin Voss's father has something to do with floodwaters?
Well, we're all affected. This is Robin Voss's district. He is here.
Yeah.
It's Paul Ryan's district, and they both came here. Walker came here yesterday, and Paul Ryan came here, and they did a little flyby and a little waving kind of thing. And we have some real problems here. Anybody who has insurance better check their insurance and make sure it covers flood, because some people, you can only get one kind of insurance, and you have to go someplace else to get flood insurance. And a lot of people better check their insurance policies in Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm.
We have another problem here. The Canadian Northern Railroad comes through here, and it creates a problem because when the water gets on the other side of the track, there's no drainage tiles to put it back into the river. And so the whole city floods that way, and it could possibly be solved in that direction. I talked to the National Weather Service yesterday. They came through here, and they said, we're short-staffed here. When somebody retires, they are not replacing these people. And this whole thing of weather and climate control and climate change has become a political football, and these people are afraid to even write down the right statistics because they're all trying to keep President Trump happy with this. There is no climate change, and anybody can look at it. We had 18 feet of high water. The Honey Creek, Sugar Creek, the White River, the Fox River, they're all flooded. And if we get one more inch of water here, we're going to be inundated. We have the dam here. They say if the dam breaks, it's going to be like the Fukushima thing over there in Japan. There'll be an 8-foot tidal wave that'll just go through the entire town. And they're sitting here with these big semis full of these big rocks. They're big boulders, and just hoping that the dam doesn't break.
Holy Toledo, Tom! Thank you for calling. I'm sorry to jump in, and we could go the rest of the hour on what's going on in Burlington right now, but we don't have time. But taking the political angle out of this, Penny, Tom is concerned that nobody's really talking about climate change and what he believes is related to the flooding that they're seeing in Burlington.
Well, and Tom has a very good point, is that as we see our climate change, we're going to see stronger and bigger storms that will have more impact on us. And that also raises budget concerns, because if we look at our budgets, we don't have enough money in our rainy day fund, which is not really a pun, but we don't have enough money available to take care of these emergency kind of issues. And so it's a double-edged sword here, where we're going to have more storms because our climate is changing and we won't be able to afford to fix what happens after those storms. So we have a huge problem that we're facing, and we need to find a way to solve it.
Keen.
Well, first of all, I think our hearts and our prayers should go out to the people who've experienced this flooding. I think it's not been a regular case. This is that area has flooded. Certainly it comes then unexpected just difficult to meet. But it sounds like everyone from the governor's office to Speaker Ryan's office is on top of what's happening. It is an unfortunate natural disaster. It's one point. I don't know that it's certainly not proof of a climate change. These things happen occasionally in different areas, And I think our people are on top of them, and I hope they get the federal money for it. They meet the disaster threshold, and I think, you know, we just have to pray for them and make sure that they get the resources to make things better.
When we come back, we will talk about more issues in the state of Wisconsin, including the impasse over state transportation funding, and we'll welcome your questions, your views, other state issues you want to talk about at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to ideas@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Week in Review. Our guests today are Keene Winters, a small business owner from Schofield, the coordinator of the Center-Right Coalition of Wausau, and Penny Bernard Schaber, a former Democratic state representative from Appleton. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network. This is the Week in Review. I'm Joy Cardine, talking with two guests from different perspectives, Penny Bernard Schaber and Keene Winters. And now we will talk about issues in the state of Wisconsin. In Madison, the impasse over the state's transportation budget continues. Assembly Speaker Robin Voss says he has accepted that there will be no gas tax or vehicle fee increases. In return, he says he won't support new borrowing and that the only option left is to hold the transportation budget flat. A spokesperson for Senate Majority Leader Scott Fitzgerald says that's not realistic. So what's going to happen? Keene, what should happen?
Well, I think they really truly are at an impasse from what I hear. And I think what would be interesting is the idea that's being floated that maybe transportation funding be taken out of the budget and used as a separate bill. And I think there would be a little more flexibility there. Just to add a point of interest, I was at a Republican fundraiser earlier this week, headlined by Lieutenant Governor Clayfish, and she took an informal poll, and you know, a majority of people that were attending would support both a 5-cent raise in the gas tax and a registration fee, and that's you know, Republican donors. So I think that says something. There's probably a slight majority of people, maybe not 60%, but early 50s, that would, I think, would like to see this transportation issue solved and the fund made solvent again.
What do you think's going on here, Penny?
Well, I think it shows that the Republicans are not able to govern, even though they have a supermajority they engineered through gerrymandering. They have all, you know, the ball is in their court, and they can't fix this problem because the governor has dug in his heels and said he doesn't want to raise taxes. Well, if we're going to fix our roads, which are very important to our economy and the future of our state, we have to do something that will be a long-term fix. We have to actually pay for roads. We can't continue to borrow and spend as we've been doing ever since Governor Walker became the governor, borrowing and spending for roads. We can't do that. We have to find a way either to replace the indexing of the gas tax or to raise fees, as Keene said. We have to do something for the long-term fix of our roads.
Let's go to Chris in Columbus. Hi, Chris.
Hi. Once again, great show. Joy and love hearing nice conversation without hollering.
Good.
So the transportation fund got raided to pay for general expenditures by Jim Doyle. That's where the process of road shortages begins. And spending more money, borrowing more money, and raising taxes, which, you know, we talked about healthcare being expensive and people can't afford that. Well, people can't afford tax increases either. So neither one is fiscally responsible. So what we should do is prioritize our projects and live within our means. And actually, we could go with donations. How about instead of tolls, we set up a little, you know, donation gates manned on major on-ramps, and you can donate if you think that that road needs some repair.
Well, I wonder how many people would do that. But let me, because we have a little time here, I wanted to also talk about this group of Republican lawmakers who introduced a bill yesterday that would do some of what Chris was saying. It would reform the Department of Transportation. It would repeal the prevailing wage. It would allow municipalities to impose wheel taxes only through referendums. It would require local government approval for roundabouts. It would lay out alternative methods for delivering road projects, such as having a single contractor handle all phases of a project. Is this reforming the DOT and trying to cut costs there a way to go?
Well, I think there are some things in that package that could be helpful, and that we should look at how our Department of Transportation works and make sure that it's working very efficiently. But I don't think this is the solution for the funding problem that we have in our roads. And I think Chris made a point about rating the fund under Governor Doyle. Well, you know, the fund was able to be rated at that time, which is unfortunate because there was an indexing of the gas tax that allowed the fund to have enough money in it to be used for some other things. Now that fund cannot be rated because it has been protected constitutionally, so there's no longer a chance to do any of that kind of rating. But we do have to look to fixing our roads so that we have an economic future in our state. Tolls, if you put tolls in, it will take 10 years before you actually get a payback on that. So tolls are not the solution to the problem, and voluntary donations, as Chris suggested, probably won't fix the problem either.
Would you donate at a voluntary contribution toll booth, Keene?
Probably not. It depends. I might do it a little check off on the tax return, but I'd ask this of Penny. What do you think of the idea of taking transportation out of the budget and having now a separate bill passing the rest of the budget now? Do you think Democrats would, your caucus, former caucus, would join in a constructive way with Republicans to craft a solution then or not?
I think they might. I think, but also then they would have to have a discussion about other parts of the budget, that such as policy items that shouldn't be in the budget. For any budget, you know, so why separate this one thing and then leave everything else in the budget that maybe isn't a good thing in the budget either? So we have to be a little careful with that.
Yeah,
but I think it's worth the effort to look at.
We are going to be talking on our State Capitol Report on Monday after 7 o'clock with one of the lead authors of this transportation DOT reform bill. Republican State Senator Chris Kapinga will join us from 7 until 7:30. And you know what? We're out of time. Thank you both very much for being with us.
Well, thanks very much, Joy.
It's good talking to you both. Penny Bernard-Shaber is a former Democratic State Representative from Appleton, and Keene Winters is a small business owner from Schofield and coordinator of the Center-Right Coalition. Thanks very much to Bill Martins for producing this program, and thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. I'm Joy Cardine. There is the On Point Weekly News Roundtable coming up next. This is the Ideas Network.